an interview with Mr. Carter Beamer for the Woodville Department of Museums oral history program on the 1950s polio epidemic here in Woodville. Today is the 8th of August, 2002, and the interviewer is Linda Logan from the Department of Museums. This is tape number 8.802. Mr. Carter Beamer. Okay, and now the equipment is working, and I'm talking with Mr. Carter Beamer, who was town manager here in Woodville during the polio epidemic of 1950. What is the first memory that comes to mind of, in your position, you must have had a lot of responsibility.
Well, administrative responsibilities, yes. The polio epidemic kind of came quietly and slipped up on us, so to speak. It was around the latter part of June, or first of July of 1950, when these first cases started showing up. And in those days, it was called infantile paralysis. And it was thought to be a disease that just afflicted small children. But we found out in the course of time that it also afflicted young adults as well. My first recollection is of things around the 1st of July, 1950. We started having cases, which was called, as I said, infantile paralysis.
Mm-hmm. And at that time, we didn't know the cause, did we?
At that time, we didn't know the cause, and for that matter, I don't know if we still know the cause. But we were in total ignorance, I believe. Doctors knew very little about it as well. And as these first cases came up, our doctors here, which were few in number in those days, promptly sent them generally to Roanoke. Possibly a few went to Winston-Salem or other places, but generally they went to Roanoke. And generally, it was Roanoke Memorial Hospital.
Mm-hmm. In one of the newspaper articles I've read, and we've collected a lot of articles from back then and since then about the epidemic, they said that the year before, in 1949, the town donated the most money to the campaign to create a wing at Roanoke Memorial Hospital without even knowing that they were going to have so many people going there. But it seems to sort of foreshadow what a positive place this was and how the people worked together. Whitfield's been called the town that kept its head during this crisis.
I was not aware of this donation to the Roanoke Memorial, but that generally was the hospital where most people went or were taken by our local doctors when they thought the illness or situation was beyond them. So it was generally the hospital away from town. Mm-hmm. I've been reviewing our council minutes. The first meeting in the town council dealt with it was on July the 10th. The cases had started showing up, And the town council was wondering what to do, and of course I was wondering what to do. No one knew anything really. But anyway, they met on July the 10th with Dr. Pope, who was the health director for WIC in Bland Counties at that time. And he advised that we should emphasize through radio and newspapers that we should spray the garbage cans with the solution of DDT. And also people should be encouraged to keep garbage cans covered, keep screens repaired, clean up all trash and debris generally to try to improve sanitation.
Mm-hmm.
All of that, he admitted readily that he didn't know what was causing it, what was causing the polio cases. So we did pick up some from that. The health department, they were very cooperative and energetic, but they were just like the rest of us. They didn't know anything specifically.
Well, that made it all the more frightening, I would think.
Well, it did. We were trying to find out something to do or what to do, and they didn't really know either. So
somebody must have kept a cool head, though.
At the meeting on the 10th, they suggested that we have a daily broadcast of the number of cases, and also that we should send samples of our water, town water, supply to the state health department every other day. The practice had been to send it once a week.
Oh.
So we wanted to check the water. They thought that, well, maybe it's the water.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a thought. But anyway, nothing occurred there, but we did do that.
So they checked the water and it was okay?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, at that time, it was underway. People were aware of what was going on, sort of. And they did advise Dr. Pope, and it was generally known, and it was mentioned on the radio, that the swimming pool had been closed, that the theaters had been closed.
So they were declaring it a crisis and an epidemic?
Sort of an emergency. We didn't know what to do, so we just thought people oughtn't to be gathering together.
Yeah.
That was the main idea. And so that ceased. There was maybe an interesting aspect. At that time, we had a professional baseball team, what they call Class D, beginners in professional baseball. And they were here to start the season. And I have forgotten now, they may have even had a game or two, but there's a question of whether they should continue. And it seemed to have been resolved automatically because they decided no one would go to the games. So the season, that baseball season, was canceled. Likewise.
Did they continue the year after that?
Yes. Oh. Everything picked up again the following year.
Okay.
It might be an interesting thing to some folks. The town council was very much concerned and thought that the general public, the traveling public, ought to be advised that we had an epidemic of sorts going on here. We didn't know exactly what it was, but we knew the name of it. So they decided to put up signs on the highways. That would have been Route 11, Route 2152 in those days. Outside the town, matter of fact, toward the county limits, it was taken up with the Board of Supervisors, advising the traveling public that there was currently an epidemic of polio in the county. And it was politely phrased, saying it could come back again. But the interest being that maybe they ought to keep going. And that action, well-intended, wasn't accepted real good by some of the business community, because they felt that let people stop if they want to. Mm-hmm. And matter of fact, the health department had not advised that particularly either. They didn't have any advice one way or the other on that matter of the sound.
But it was a caring thing to do.
Yes, it was. The town council was unanimous in passing this, and the Board of Supervisors agreed to it, likewise. And the signs were put up, but within a few days, someone had torn them down.
Oh.
But generally left them at the site. So we had a council meeting, and I, as town manager, was directed to put the signs back up, which was done. And those signs stayed up for probably 3 weeks, something like that. And it was generally known they would be taken down on August the 19th, or rather August the 23rd. But someone, and we didn't never know who, but the town council offered a reward to information to find out who it was. Someone removed him on August the 19th.
Oh, yeah. Did they ever find out who?
No, they never did find out. They had suspicions, but no one found out. And
they weren't put
back up again, because they were due to come down on the 23rd anyway.
Did you find them?
The signs? No, this is the last time around we didn't find them. I think they were carried away. And there wouldn't have been of any further use anyway, so no search was made.
Mm-hmm.
That created a little controversy, but the intention of both the town council and the Board of Supervisors was to do what they thought was the I guess you could say Christian thing, and advise people of our problem.
Well, it was very thoughtful. People then had a choice of what to do.
That's true.
And I suppose at that time, the only way through was to take 11.
True. At that time, we had these highways, so Route 11, Route 21, and 52. That was it. There were no interstate highways mm-hmm. at that time. And so Ripple then, as now, depended a lot on business, mm-hmm. on the traffic passing through. Actually, it was July the 25th was when right in the middle of the epidemic at that time. The number of cases was sort of kept up, but it never was current, because people were going to the doctors. In some cases, it's just suspicion of polio.
Probably.
And they would go and come back home. Other cases, they went and they had to stay. Some cases were real serious, and some people died. But it was a mixture, and it was difficult to keep up with. The doctors here couldn't tell for sure whether they had it or not, and so they were traveling back and forth. It was hard to have a current count at any time.
Sure. I've read that many cases are
always undiagnosed because they're just like a summer flu, and they're light cases.
That's true. And yeah. Even in this case, even though it was an epidemic, the majority of the cases were light. And many that were suspected of being poliomyelitis were not.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say we didn't have plenty that were. But they didn't know much about it in those days. And as I said earlier, as far as I can tell, I still don't know a lot about it.
Well,
thanks to Dr. Salk, yeah, we are able to do something.
We have a vaccine, and that's really made a difference. So we don't have to worry about it like we once did.
It may be of interest that on July 25th, as I said, we were in the midst of it and somewhat thrashing about to see what they might do.
What kinds of just practical things did you think to do? You've mentioned the spraying the garbage cans and all that.
We had a meeting on the 25th of July, and we had Dr. Turner, who was the Southwestern District of Virginia Health Director, and the local director, which was Dr. Pope, and the council met with him, those two, plus some others, they indicated, generally speaking, that we were doing what we could do, but we had already started, but they, at that meeting, did sort of approve it, the matter of spraying about the town. And even though we never knew if that was worthwhile or not, it was psychologically the thing to do, we found. We rented a fog-type sprayer, and we went up and down the streets spraying up in the trees on either side and along the streets. It certainly did kill a lot of flies and other insects.
Yeah,
but we never knew if it had anything to do with the polio thing. But the citizens of the town saw something was being done. They could see this fog going out along the street. And we did that spraying for continuously, essentially for more than a month. Not in along every street every day, but in the town. We just kept that sprayer operating. And that people saw we were doing something, and from a standpoint of public relations, that was the best thing we did.
Well, you did manage to keep people calm despite the frightening aspect, according to articles about it. There was a recent article in St. Petersburg Time in Florida about Whitfield, how well you managed it. And the issue came up because of the anthrax scare last fall, just, you know, having a mysterious illness break out. You know, the writer of this article looked for a town that was a good model. And then
I think that is true. I'm not sure the reason. Maybe it's because we didn't know anything to do except just keep going doing what we had been doing. I should say that probably that in addition to the spraying, the town continued to do work on the streets, patching the streets and paving and doing some concrete work and doing water and sewer work. We kept going in a normal manner, and the merchants kept, the stores stayed open, though generally I think there was very little business going on. Restaurants stayed open. More or less, things continued in the town, with the exception of public meetings, more or less normal.
Mm-hmm.
Church services continued. on Sundays. That's about the only kind of gathering I think that did continue in a normal fashion.
Was attendance down during that period?
Attendance was down, I'm sure, at the churches. It was at the church that I attend.
But they stayed?
Because the children, they generally wouldn't bring the children. The adults came, but generally they wouldn't bring the children. I can't recall for sure if school was delayed, but I really don't think it was. In those days, the schools didn't start till up toward mid-September.
That's right.
So by that time, the polio thing had waned. There weren't many any new cases of consequence of very much. So I believe school started on time. If it was delayed, it was very little.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any interaction with the March of Dimes or other agencies once you had defined
the vaccination? We didn't have anything directly, but the health department did indicate that they had met with the what they call in those days the Infantile Paralysis Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, the officials of that organization had assured them that it was called the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis, that they had assured them that they would do everything they could, and they had agreed with what the health department and the local government was doing. They didn't know much more, I guess, than we did.
That's
but
right.
They did agree and indicated they would do everything possible. And I did hear, though I have no specific facts, that they paid a lot of bills, paid a lot of costs to victims of the polio, and
mm-hmm.
and the travel to get them to the doctor, to their hospital, and perhaps I think in some cases hospital bills.
Mm-hmm.
I was told, and no reason to doubt it, that they did contribute substantially in a monetary fashion.
Mm-hmm. That's very important. Do you remember much about the iron lungs, the respirators that they, I guess the hospitals had, or the doctors were able to bring in?
No, I don't know a whole lot about that. Some of the medical people could answer that better, but in the beginning, at least, they all had to went to Roanoke, essentially, mm-hmm. to a hospital away from here. I think it was a little later, really, toward the end of July or early August, that seems like our rescue squad maybe was able to get hold of one, which
mm-hmm.
served as a temporary way to get them to the hospital. And eventually, they even had one or two operating in the county, and one man, I expect you have information about it, stayed in one until he died some 25 or 30 years later.
Yes. As a matter of fact, his family donated that iron lung to the museums.
I'm aware of the uh-huh. iron lung in the museum.
That was his. And we also have an infant iron lung. And when we create the exhibit that we'll make from this project, those will be artifacts in the exhibit, of course. Can you think of any other objects that symbolize what you went through or would be good things to collect for an exhibit to show people what people did at home, or if they had a polio victim in the family? Do any things come to mind that
I suppose that the best information there would come from a victim's families.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know very many personally that were involved. I knew some of the families, but I never discussed it with them. I think probably the various articles in the newspaper, perhaps even you might want to look at the minutes of council meetings during that period, which was mentioned in five different meetings, starting on July the 13th.
Well, that's an excellent speech.
And going through August the 23rd. But other these minutes also indicate that there are other things were going on at the same time. It wasn't, the town didn't just deal with polio during that period. Everything else continued in as normal a fashion as possible.
Which was reassuring to the people.
I believe so.
Yes.
I believe so.
And
the one thing that some people seem to say that there was an exodus of people from the town, but that really wasn't, in my view, that's not true at all. Most people just stayed at home. They stayed at home, tried to keep doing what they had been doing, kept their children at home pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no exodus from the town that I saw.
Maybe just a few here and there.
A few, if they had relatives somewhere, they maybe send their children over there for a month until it blew over.
I imagine people with children had to be creative about entertaining them or keeping them busy since they couldn't.
Yes, I think they didn't have the other things that they might have been doing, so they were underfoot a lot more.
In an article in the Washington Post in 1950, in August 6th, it mentions Whitfield is still keeping its head. It's a very positive article about Whitfield. And there's a mention of a Met somewhere in the town or county where each time there was a new case, a pin was added.
I believe the health department kept a record of that kind, and I know they kept a record of the names of people and so forth there. Though it was, I said earlier, they had a problem trying to keep it current.
Sure.
Those suspected cases sometimes became non-cases, and it was hard to know exactly a number at any time. But I have an idea that number was updated toward the end so that they had a pretty accurate count.
Mm-hmm.
I never did see a map like that.
Oh, okay. It would probably be with the health department.
I think they were trying to keep track of it best they could.
Well,
the office was not large. They only had two or three people in the office, including the doctor.
And you checked the usual things in nature, the water, the sanitation, all that was already checked out. So
we were checking all that as closely as we could.
Did you find that citizens would stop and ask you about it as you went about town?
They didn't stop and ask me personally. But I've told by others that sometimes they would stop and ask if this is where they had all the polio, words to that effect. I was also told that people rolled up their windows to go
mm-hmm.
through town.
Okay.
I didn't personally see that either.
Okay.
But I don't doubt that it may have happened in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, cars were not air conditioned.
Oh.
So would people rode around with windows down?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
And one aspect, if this kind of thing happened in today's, the way we have today's media coverage, you'd have constant reporters on the job and constant mm-hmm. talk on TV and that kind of thing.
That's right.
TV was in its infancy. We didn't have a TV in 1950. I think it was 1953 or 4 before we got a TV.
Mm-hmm,
but there were very few TVs around, so that was not really a factor.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have all the reporters chasing around trying to talk to someone.
Today it would be different.
It would be entirely different if that kind of thing happened again.
Today we run the risk of too much information. It almost confuses.
I think so, and it tends to perhaps frighten
mm-hmm.
or cause people to panic when unnecessarily.
And worry about.
That's true.
Yeah, the news is not always good news or helpful. So there was more quiet and just calm going about the business of daily life.
That's true. As I say, most people just continued about their normal work, whatever they had been doing. Not a whole lot of difference. But when they were personally involved, of course, they had to get involved. One thing we haven't mentioned, and they were perhaps the heroes in the situation. Ambulances in those days were operated by the funeral homes.
Oh.
There are two of them here, Barnett Funeral Home, and the other was Porterfield Minnick.
Mm-hmm.
And the only ambulance service was the ambulance that each one operated. And they transported all these people to Roanoke or some other place, but generally Roanoke. And the drivers did it, and they never knew even who they were, generally. But the funeral homes cooperated. In this thing.
Well, Mr. D.L. Barnett is in some of these articles.
I see. Well, he would be familiar with what happened.
Uh-huh. Well, they were heroes.
They really were, because they went night and day there for a while with those ambulances, and I think they had to have an attendant plus a driver, and that was the main thing they were doing, because it was keeping them busy, keeping them going night and day.
I imagine so, because they couldn't wait around once they had a case.
That's true. The doctor, since they suspected a case, polyomyelitis, they called the ambulance and send them to Roanoke, generally.
Hmm. Well, they should be given credit for all that, because then as now, transportation is critical in emergency.
Yeah, and there were no helicopter flights in those days. People who were ill,
mm-hmm.
to put them in an ambulance. And
did it affect how they did funerals? Or there were some deaths here. Did they have public funerals?
Yes, I'm sure they did. I suppose those attending the funerals were different from what might have been normal,
mm-hmm.
but I don't believe it made very much difference in that respect. I think they carried on normal.
Mm-hmm.
They maybe had a problem with all the transporting that they were doing of keeping everything going.
Yeah, in case they had a funeral
yeah.
to take care of. I imagine quite a few stories there. They were on call probably like doctors were, in a way.
I'm sure they were. The funeral homes were, as I said, operating night and day, And I'm sure they had to have arrangements so they'd have a driver and an attendant. Betty, they were ready to go. To the best of my knowledge, they responded promptly all the time.
I have read that some towns on the way did not want them to stop when they were going through, if it was an ambulance, because they were concerned about the contamination.
I think I've heard that sort of thing maybe, but I don't think that really was a problem because they had no idea of stopping anyway.
Yeah, just get there.
Get there as quick as possible.
Last fall, when the anthrax problem developed and the first part of it, people didn't know how they were getting sick. Did it remind you or bring to mind this at all, even though it's a different disease? Just the way the country was.
Well, I did think about that, but not seriously, because I really didn't know anything about polio, and I still don't know much about it.
Yeah.
And I know even less about anthrax. I've told in the anthrax thing, though, that I read an article that said that anthrax is common on farms, and particularly in Texas. It's something that they deal with all the time.
It occurs naturally.
That's what I read, and I was surprised that it got to be a thing of hysteria almost. Some of the congressional buildings had to close down for weeks because of the scare.
Because we had a terrorist working there.
I think.
Somewhere. Well, I just ask you that question because of the articles, like the one in St. Petersburg Times, that inspired the looking back into Whitfield's way of dealing with a crisis, a public health crisis. Of course,
it's different times, but I think if there's anything to pass along, it's to keep calm and do what you can, and if possible, do something that will have a calming effect on people so that they don't do things that are irrational or uncalled for.
Yes, you were, the government, the town officials are role models at times like that for the people.
I think so, and I should say that Bill Arthur, who is still living, I was looking at these council minutes, he is the only one of the people from that time who is still living. And he was mayor at the time, later to become Judge Arthur. And he's a good speaker and a good spokesman, and he spoke at some meetings and on the radio several times, and he served as a good leader during that time. Put things in perspective, and people generally then as now had a lot of respect for him.
Very important to have someone like that in the center of it. The radio station was important, wasn't it, at that time in terms of...
Yes, it was. We have to understand that back in those times, the radio, even our radio station here, was relatively new. We were just getting used to it. It just started a year or two before that. Hmm. I think this thing's going to spur the radio station to take more interest in the news. Up until that time, I think they did report a little news, but they found that people could listen to the radio and did listen to the radio to hear what's going on, especially what's going on locally.
Uh-huh.
And it put them in the news business, I think, more than they had been. And they did cooperate 100%.
I've read about that announcer, Sidney Teer, who also came down with polio. He was a radio announcer at that time. But he carried on. He did programs.
I knew about one of their people getting polio, but I wasn't aware that he was able to carry on.
Apparently he did a lot.
Arthur Gates was the owner then, and he continued with it for a long, long time. But he was most cooperative in any civic endeavor, and he cooperated 100% in giving out such news as they had, and with a calming effect at the time.
Sounds like everyone came together really well.
I believe so.
We should be proud.
Generally, the people showed, a lot of courage at the time. I should mention, perhaps, that even our industries, you ask about things going on, all the industries that were, which were generally in those days was just two main ones, what they call the knitting mills out on Texas Ferry Road. And what they call the shirt factory, which is on West Main Street. But they continued full employment, full work during the period. And if there was absenteeism because of the polio, I never did hear of it.
And on in Gross Close, I grew up in Smith County before I returned to it.
That's not far from here.
No. And I asked her about it. Her husband was working in Wichita at that time at the knitting mills. And she said he was frightened. And I think he worked at night. And when he came in, he took his clothes off and left them outside, and then came in and bathed, because several people apparently did get sick in the mills, but they kept working. But, she said he just worried about it so much that he came down with hepatitis, which is
everybody who had any kind of pain during that period wondered if they might be getting polio.
It was a great time for hypochondriacs.
I'm sure.
Well, it would concern you because the symptoms are so general.
That's true. The symptoms could go with lots of things, and it was easy for people to become concerned.
You know of any folk remedies or anything people did just out of superstition? Because sometimes when we're frightened, we don't know the cause of things. We eat more spinach or, anything like that come to mind?
Not to me. I really don't know of any remedies that people were using. Generally, they just knew so little about this thing that they had no idea what to do or what might be helpful.
Just stay home.
And even after the things that we did, especially the spraying, we had no idea whether that really had any effect or not.
But it was a good.
But it made people see that we're doing something. I think the public officials need to be conscious that the people are looking, and if they're doing something well-intentioned, even though it may not be effective, it's better than nothing.
That's right, and especially in the presence of the unknown, because, mosquitoes and flies, there are some diseases transmitted that way.
In connection with the spraying, it might be interesting. We continued that spraying all for years afterwards. Matter of fact, even up until my retirement at the end of 1983, we were still had a program of spraying, which I believe now has been discontinued. Maybe we don't have as many flies now as we used to have. But anyway, that spraying seemed to have a good effect, and I think it did cause the town to have less flies, less mosquitoes, fewer insects on the trees, possibly. But anyway, we did that, and I think it had a good effect.
We may have to return to something like that for this West Nile virus.
It seems entirely possible that we're going to have to do something to try to stop it. What I have read so far, they say there's no way of stopping the mosquitoes altogether.
Well, those insects keep reproducing in hot weather.
True.
Someone I've talked with mentioned that the winter of 49 before the summer of 50 was a very warm winter, unusually so, in that it didn't snow, which was rare for here. Do you remember anything like that? They didn't know that was a factor, but they felt, you know, maybe it didn't kill off germs and things.
I'm rather dubious that really. I recall we had a tremendous snowstorm around just at Thanksgiving in 19. And what was that? That was after the epidemic.
Year.
You're right. In 49, I really can't remember. I don't know.
Detail that, you know, someone put out there, that they remembered that the winter was so mild, it was spring, and then the summer.
That would cause us to have more insects, more than likely.
Mm-hmm.
But we were never able to attribute to polio to any insect. So.
No.
So we never went there again, we don't know.
That's right. I think the scientists have decided it's a virus that's transmitted orally, but still how it was transmitted is not settled.
We're going to need a Dr. Salk around to look at, see about this new virus, the West Nile thing.
I know. I hope somebody's working on
that. Yeah, me too.
Because I heard about a bird they found in Patrick County, which is not far away.
True.
So that is another thing to think about, watch out for. Spray ourselves with the deep when we go out in the woods.
An interesting thing in those days, as I mentioned, I think, earlier, DDT was the spray of choice for just about everything.
Uh-huh. And now they don't.
No, it's not allowed at all. It wasn't too many years after that, probably not more than 3 or 4 years after that, that DDT was taken off the market and you're not to use it anymore.
Right, that's over.
But in those days, that was the spray. I'm sure it had a downside, which is well known now. But it also was a very good spray as far as killing off insects.
Yes.
Killing off the insects.
Yeah, that's for sure. It worked that way. Can you think of anything I haven't brought up that I should have or that might be worth covering?
I might mention one thing is there again, though, which is I have this complete lack of knowledge. At that time, we were working toward getting a sewage treatment plant established. The town didn't have one.
Oh, really? So people had.
That was one of the things I was supposed to be working on, which I was.
Uh-huh.
but it hadn't happened. The sewage effluent went into the what is called Cedar Run, a town branch in those days, I think, south of town, just south of the railroad, which was south of town in those days. The effluent was chlorinated with a kind of a crude chlorinating mechanism, but it worked. And during this time, we wondered in trying to think what could be the problem, if it might be coming from the sewage, mm-hmm. particularly untreated sewage, essentially untreated or chlorinated. So we stepped up to chlorination. We started putting in 2 and 3 times the normal amount.
During that time. Uh-huh. That makes sense.
And there again, we have no idea whether that was doing any good or not, but we were doing anything we could uh-huh. think of that we thought might be a factor. And we never did know.
Yeah. How long after that did the town get the sewage treatment plant?
It was in 1952 when the sewage treatment plant was constructed. It took a while to get the bond, had a bond issue and the construction done and so forth.
And that's the one that's now on 21?
No, it's south of town on Old Mill, on the, where Cedar Run goes into Reed Creek.
Oh,
it's okay. It's almost the same location where the sewage treatment plant is now, except it was on the town side of Reed Creek. Now it's on the other side of Reed Creek.
And that's the one that was constructed.
So that was already being worked on, but I guess that epidemic caused us to try to work a little more expeditiously.
Yeah, focus on that.
Yeah.
Well, you would.
But there again, I say, well, no, we had no idea whether that was a factor or not.
That's right. But you were doing all the right things.
We were trying to.
Yeah.
We kept working and kept on going.
The next summer, 1951, I imagine there were still cases, but were you gearing up for another big epidemic, or do you remember how you felt about summer coming again?
I'm sure there was apprehension on the part of some folks, but I think, generally speaking, people were just continued doing what they had been doing, sort of a fatalistic approach, I suppose, and thinking if it comes again, it may come again. But I think there was a realization it was some kind of epidemic, and those things tend to pass.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Fortunately.
The world of nature.
Yes.
Keeps changing.
I don't think there's a lot of worry the following year.
Yeah. You have been through the worst.
I think so. Yeah. After you've been through a big one, why?
Yeah.
you think a little one we could handle.
Yeah. It's interesting that all these years later, governments or other people are looking at Woodville as a good model of dealing with a public health crisis.
I feel like we did very well during that time, trying to continue not things in a normal fashion, but still recognizing that it wasn't normal.
Right. One of the interesting aspects to me is the theories that just evolved of what was causing it before we knew, because people, you know, they have to imagine something going on. And one article mentions that someone thought the town was being sort of cursed or something because they had an ABC store here. I mean, that's just, you know, different people come up with different...
Well, I heard that kind of thing mentioned, too. Some of the more fanatical, possibly, preachers felt like things were, our sins were catching up with us. But I don't think, there no serious thought was given to removing the ABC store. People had grown accustomed to it. It was just a natural thing here.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't in some of our neighboring towns.
It was not in Smith County, and I have a whole story about that.
I've heard that story.
Oh, have you, about the doctor who
and
broke the bottles and they poured down the streets of Marion?
Yes, I heard that. We used to get a lot of people visiting down here from Marion because of them not having a store.
That's right. It's just the place. Whitfield's always been somewhat of a tourist spot, hasn't it? I mean, to a certain degree.
Yes, back, that was one of the big attractions. Whitfield was a relatively cool place because of the elevation primarily. Essentially the same as Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh.
And back before air conditioning, and especially in the late 1800s and early 1900s, people came here from Louisiana and far places down that way, far south, to spend the summer. So it got to be very much a tourist place, and there were boarding houses, and they catered to tourists.
Is that still going on in 1950?
It was pretty much over that part of it. People coming here to stay during the summer, but it continued to be a tourist place because of the fact that the highways crossed here.
Uh-huh. And it's beautiful.
Which they still do.
That's right.
And that's the reason we have so much traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
That's good for
business. And it's good for business. That's our biggest business, without a doubt.
Is it?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
With such a well-organized...
Motels and restaurants and those things.
Mm-hmm.
Trucking. Trucking is a big thing for our county, I think, because of our location. It's hard. Very few small places that have two interstates crossing at a place like that.
That's
usually,
right.
It's in a large city where that occurs.
Mm-hmm. You've seen a lot of growth, I'm sure, and with the freeways coming in.
A lot of business growth. Our population is essentially the same, which suits me fine.
That's right. We don't mind if they come and leave.
No, it's a good place to live.
It's a wonderful place, a beautiful place, with the historic district and the wide streets. And I lived away many years, and then I love to come back and work in a town like this where you still have a main street, because so many main streets have disappeared.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's holding up pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you very much.
You're welcome indeed. I hope I have contributed something. It brings back a lot of memories.